Thank you. It's a pleasure to have with me here in the studio Paolo Berti. Paolo, it's from the Cuban Foreign Ministry, and he's the head of Human Rights and Social Affairs Group at the Multilateral Affairs Division at the Cuban Foreign Ministry. Pablo, welcome to Radio Havana, Cuba. Today, the 43rd regular session of the Human Rights Council is beginning, and it's going to run from February 24th through March the 20th. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about Cuba's involvement with the United Nations human rights mechanisms?
Thank you very much. First, let me tell you once again that Cuba has been a founding member of the Human Rights Council. At the same time, we were very active during the times of the Human Rights Commission. In 2006, with the establishment of the Human Rights Council, Cuba, as a founding member, continued to present many resolutions that were in favor of the developing countries' positions in the Human Rights Council and on human rights in general. Cuba has been a member of many of the bodies that are involved in the human rights mechanisms in the United Nations, and has been very active during these two times that we have been member of the Human Rights Council. We have finished last year as member of the Council after 6 years at the Council, and this year, particularly to 2020, we are not member of the Human Rights Council. This doesn't mean that we are not going to be active as before. We have for this session that is starting today, three resolutions that will be presented during the 43rd session of the Council. One on right to food, one on the effect of foreign debt on human rights, and one on cultural rights. So that means that Cuba is very active at the Council and have a compromise with the Council and its mechanisms, in particular the one that they are universal in nature and not discriminatory.
One question. You're telling me about Cuba's membership at the Council, and you told me that it's been just until last year, it was 6 years. So the 47 countries that make up the Council, how are they elected? Are they elected geographically? How does it work?
Yes, there is a geographical distribution established in the Resolution 60251 of the General Assembly that was adopted in March 2006 in New York. Beginning in June 2006, the Human Rights Council was established with 47 members that is divided geographically. For example, I don't have the list right now, but there are seven for one region, eight for another one. For example, this time, instead of what will happen in the Human Rights Commission, where you have no geographical distribution and you have many members of the WEO group, meaning Western
European.
European and other states group, they had a majority in the Human Rights Commission. Now it's a geographical distribution, and countries from different regions are represented equally at the level of number of countries that are that region.
And obviously, their election, it's through a vote. It's democrat. It's through a vote of the General Assembly, right?
The election is through a vote in the General Assembly. It happens right now in usually between October and November each year. Cuba is a candidate for the election that will take place in October, November this year, and we hope to continue to be members of the Council beginning 1st of January 2021.
One of the innovations of the Human Rights Council was the establishment of the procedure of the Universal Periodic Review. It's my understanding that it's already on its starting its fourth cycle. Or is it still in, on its third cycle?
It's still in the third cycle.
Third cycle.
Is the this mechanism is a most universal and not discriminatory mechanism that has the Human Rights Council. Every country, member of the United Nations, have to pass through this mechanism. And all the countries have the possibility to make questions and recommendations to the country who present the their report. You have to present prepare a report on the advancement of on human rights in your country, and the other countries will make recommendations. The state have the, under review has the possibility to agree on the recommendation, and this means they have to be implemented, or they can reject or take note of the of that recommendation. But it's a truly non-discriminatory mechanism, and it, Cuba has been there for the three times, 2009, 2013, and 2018.
Let me ask you one question, because you just mentioned something to, that to me sounds very interesting, and I hope that for our listeners it's interesting as well. Let's suppose that one member country of the United Nations of the current 193 countries is not a member of the Human Rights Council. Is that country subjected to the UPR?
Yes.
For example, it's my understanding that the United Nations left, withdrew from the Human Rights Council. Is the U.S. going to be subjected to the UPR as well?
Yes, the U.S. have to pass through this mechanism.
And how does it work? The member states that are not that do not participate, do they send their reports? Are they compelled to send their reports?
They have to do it. It's a this mechanism is it was adopted through the resolution of the General Assembly, meaning that they have to present the report. There are three reports that are presented during the session. One report is produced by the member state under review. All members of the United Nations have to do it. Second report is one prepared by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights that is based on the recommendations made by all other organs of the United Nations related to human rights. And the third one is the one that is a compilation of the information made by other stakeholders, meaning civil society organizations. Till now, no country has avoided the presentation of the report at the Human Rights Council. Only once Israel had some problems with the presentation of the report, but at the end, they did it like 3 or 4 months after the time that was supposed to happen. The U.S., although they left the Human Rights Council in June 2018, they are participating in the UPR process. They are making questions. It's the only time that you see delegates of the U.S. sitting in the room 20 at the United Nations in Geneva.
You are tuned to Radio Havana Cuba, and we are speaking with Pablo Berti. He's the head of Human Rights and Social Affairs Group at the Multilateral Affairs Division at the Cuban Foreign Ministry. Pablo, returning to the issue of the UPR, you said that Cuba has already participated in three times in the cycles. How has Cuba reacted? Because it's my understanding that the UPR, the country presents a national report, which provides some kind of an understanding of how it sees itself in terms of the fulfillment of human rights within the nation. And it also is open to suggestions from other member states who participate in the process. How has it been with Cuba over the last three cycles in which the country has been evaluated by this mechanism?
Well, the first one was was the most important, let's say that way, because you have to present a report on the advancement of human rights in your country. After that, the second cycle and the third cycle has been on the implementation of the recommendations that you agree in the previous cycle. So meaning that the recommendations that we agree in 2009, during the first cycle, in 2013, we had to present a report saying what we did to implement it. Because if you agree with something, means that you have to implement it. We have high rate of implementation of recommendations that we agree on, and we have presented this process to the Human Rights Council. And during the last cycle, we were one of the countries who received more recommendations than ever.
It's my understanding that there were something like 300 recommendations?
More than 300 recommendations.
That's right.
And even
how many of them were accepted by Cuba?
I don't have the exact number, but it was more than 60 or 70% of the recommendations.
What are the nature of the suggestions that are raised in this kind of process?
It can be many. Can go from right to education, improving something in the education system, to the recommendations on freedom of expression or freedom of religion, depending on what the country who present the recommendation wants to say. But one of the most important things is that we try to avoid politicization of the UPR mechanism. The UPR mechanism is truly universal, and we said that it's the way to have a clear and respectful discussion and a dialogue with other countries on the human rights situations in your country. That's why we always said at the Human Rights Council that the recommendations have to be not politicized, meaning that you can make critics to the country because you have some concerns or you want the country X to improve their situation. But when you have recommendations that are politically motivated and that instead of trying to support the country in the advancement of human rights, is just making a recommendation that you know that will be rejected by the country concerned.
And in this particular case, how does these recommendations are included within this trend by some Western countries to demonize Cuba or to sort of somehow to try to demoralize the country, just looking for pretext to allege to suppose human rights violations in the country? Are there such suggestions presented?
Yeah, of course. The U.S. Always do this to us and other countries from the Western side. They talk about these mercenaries that they have here that they call it human rights defender, for example. Just one of the cases. Or they talk about the freedom of expression in the country. That this is an example of what is freedom of expression in Cuba. Mm-hmm. How many radio we have, the possibility of people to talk with anyone in the country, at the media or whatever. But they always try to make this kind of recommendation because they know that you will reject that because it's biased. When something is biased, you cannot adopt it and agree on this kind of thing. When someone attacks you directly, it's not making a recommendation. It's an attack. And as an attack, you have to reject
it. Now, to what extent this kind of behavior by some countries could undermine the UPR process?
Well, till now, even when some of the countries try to utilize the UPR to do this kind of things, the UPR mechanism still is the one who is more universal and not discriminatory. There are some attempts from Western countries to modify the rule of procedures of the UPR. And one of the examples that they want to of these changes that they want to make is that the recommendations have to follow other processes on the implementation, and they want to impose like a mechanism of follow-up of recommendation.
Some countries want the Human Rights Council to sort of establish a follow-up of on the suggestions made to particular countries that somehow would become compulsory.
Exactly. That's one of the proposals that they have made. The other proposal is to have the involvement of civil society organizations during the GDPR discussion and the presentation of the report. Till now, what is happening at the Council is that the member state on the review present their report. They present the report, and member states make questions, recommendations, suggestions to the country. The civil society organization participate only after that, during the adoption of the report, in the Human Rights Council session where the report is adopted. So you have the GDPR working group sessioning, for example, was in January this year, the first one. And after that, the report of this session will be adopted in June. During the June session, the civil society organizations have the possibility to speak and make recommendations or whatever they want. But of course, what kind of civil society organizations are going to Geneva, to countries like Cuba? The ones who have received the resources, financial resources, by the U.S. to go there and make statements against our government. So, of course, we are not in favor of this kind of changes, because what they try is to politicize more what is happening now at the Council. But till now, everyone is defending the UPR mechanism, even the Western countries, because they know that when the UPR mechanism change to that, even when they want this idea, this will come back to them.
Correct. We're speaking with Pablo Berti, head of Human Rights and Social Affairs Group at the Multilateral Affairs Division of the Cuban Foreign Ministry. Pablo, let's turn now to what Cuba is bringing to this 43rd regular session of the Human Rights Council that started this Monday.
Well, as I told you before, this session is the main one. We have three sessions during the year. The first one is in March, second one in June, and the third one in September. This one will have 4 weeks. The first week, first 3 days of this first week of the Council will be the high-level summit. During the high-level summit, dignitaries from around the world, meaning president, prime ministers, ministers of foreign affairs or other ministers, will be present during the Human Rights Council and will present their views on the human rights situations around the world and in their countries. In our case, the head of the delegation is the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Cuba, Bruno Rodriguez Parrilla, who is attending and will be there for the making a statement, delivering a statement in the plenary of the Human Rights Council and the Conference of Disarmament, too. At the same time, the minister will have some meetings with head of international organizations and other ministers that will be there having bilateral meetings. The main points that we will present during this session and that we will be making during the whole 4 weeks are the ideas that Cuba is advancing on human rights, that Cuba will continue to cooperate with the Council even as a non-member state this year of the country, and we, of course, as usual, because we still have the blockade, we will denounce the blockade, in particular the new measures against our country and what is happening during this day as Cuban people are suffering of this violation of human rights that means the blockade. The other thing that we will denounce during the high-level summit and during the other days of the council will be the attacks to the medical cooperation that we have with many countries in the world that has been recognized at the council by many countries and even by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights sometimes. So we will defend our medical cooperation there, and we will denounce the violation of human rights that the blockade means for the Cuban people.
Sometimes the approach to human rights varies from country to country. From some Western countries, they mostly focus on certain types of rights. However, some other rights are disregarded by these countries. You were mentioning some of the resolutions that Cuba is going to bring to the Council, and one was on foreign debt. The other one was
on the right to food and cultural rights.
Some of the rights that are often disregarded by the Western countries. It's my understanding that some of the resolutions that Cuba bring to either the Third Committee of the General Assembly or the Human Rights Council are mostly related to this kind of rights. Why?
As you said, Western countries only focus on one type of rights, civil and political rights. They are the only ones for them. Although everywhere we listen this indivisibility and interdependency of human rights. So meaning that all rights are interdependent, are united, but when we go to these kind of mechanisms, we realize that they only talk about this kind of rights. So it means that you need to have freedom of expression, freedom of association, but they don't care about right to food, for example, right
or healthcare.
To life, healthcare, right to health. This, they disregard these rights. That's why Cuba always present at the Human Rights Council at least 9 resolutions, all of them linked to economic, social, and cultural rights, or third generation rights. We have other 6 resolutions on international solidarity, on right to peace, for example, promotion of international equitable order, one on the social forum, that is the only mechanism that is open to all NGOs around the world to go there and speak and contribute to the Human Rights Council sessions.
It's quite understandable that each particular country has its own history, its own culture, and its own specific social and political difficulties. To that, saying so, we could also add that no one can portray itself as being, you know, a champion, or in terms of fulfillment of human rights, any country is particularly perfect or has absolutely nothing to be said about their own records of human rights. You were mentioning some of how Cuba constructively work with the mechanism of the UN Human Rights Council and the UPR. We just adopted a new constitution. To what extent these basic rights that Cuba encourage and Cuba support are reflected on the new Magna Carta?
Well, the new constitution is a paradigm in the human rights enjoyment of the Cuban people, and the protection of this right are very, very well reflected, even better than the previous constitution. When you look carefully at the new constitution, you will see that not only the third generation rights are reflected, is the civil and political rights are very well reflected. The let's say the other the way to implement these rights are very well reflected, at the constitution. For example, on the legal rights of Cuban people, how to proceed when you have a complaint. This is very well reflected, even in the text of the constitution. That will be this will go to the law that have to be approved during these years. And we have laws on the electoral system that was adopted already, and other laws that will implement these rights that are reflected in the constitution, giving the Cuban people the possibility of present clearly to the world that from the constitutional mandate, the Cuban people have the possibility to enjoy and promote and protect their human rights. They don't have to, and if any law, any resolution, anything goes against the constitution, they have the right even to reject, complain, and there are mechanisms to do that in the new constitution. So this will help the Cuban people, and this will, as we have been doing in the Human Rights Council and other human rights mechanisms, this has been presented to the world as an improvement and an advancement on human rights of the Cuban people.
You are tuned to Radio Havana Cuba, and we're speaking with Pablo Berti, head of Human Rights and Social Affairs Group at the Multilateral Affairs Division of Cuban at the Cuban Foreign Ministry. Pablo, it could be a mantra, and Cuba, sometimes people say, well, here comes Cuba again talking about the U.S. blockade. And sometimes people do not have an idea to what extent the U.S. blockade that has been on for almost 60 years affects the fulfillment of human rights in Cuba. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, if someone said something like this, has no idea of what the Cuban people suffer because of the blockade. It's something that we have every day, that we suffer every day, every time. From the little sins of having the pencil for our student to write and to learn, that is the right to education, what we have, to the right to life. Our government made a lot of efforts to have the resources for the health system in Cuba. But when you have a blockade that impedes the possibility of Cuba to get the medical supplies that are needed to save the life of people, or sometimes to not to save the life, but to have your disease be treated in a better way and not to suffer too much when you have terminal diseases like cancer, for example. But the company that you were buying things, medical supplies, medicines, sometimes they are acquired by the U.S. company, and after that, they cannot sell anything to Cuba anymore. And then you have to go to other country, because this is what our government do. We go to other countries to buy things, even when it's more expensive. We have to spend more, but the most important thing for Cuba and for the government of Cuba is the life of our people. So we go everywhere to try to save the life of one single person in our country. But this time is even going even beyond. It's not only that they are persecuting these companies, they are going against the transactions financial transaction. So now it's even worse because, okay, you have the company that agree on selling Cuba some medical supplies. But when you have to pay to this company, you have to go through a financial transaction that goes through banks. And sometimes different banks, they didn't agree because of the fear of being fined by the U.S. So sometimes even having the company who is willing to sell the medical supplies, you cannot do it. So this is impacting very negative in the fulfillment of human rights by the Cuban people. And this has been reflected at the Human Rights Council reports presented by the Special Rapporteur on the negative effect of unilateral coercive measures on human rights. It has been very well reflected there. And there has been like 3 or 4 reports where the Special Rapporteur has denounced what is happening to Cuban people because of the U.S. blockade.
We'll thank Pablo Berti, head of Human Rights and Social Affairs Group at the Multilateral Affairs Division at the Cuban Foreign Ministry, for exchanging this time and speaking about Cuba's participation at the 43rd ordinary regular session of the Human Rights Council taking place in Geneva. Pablo, thank you very much.
Thanks to you.
I'm Jorge Millares for Radio Havana, Cuba.